the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, on the topic in Washington, in the new bill working its way through Congress, is some improvements to Medicare, more benefits. What will this mean for the program, and what does this mean for Social Security long term? Joining us on the program is Professor Alicia Monell. She's director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College and the Peter F. Drucker Professor of Management Sciences at Boston College's Carroll School of Management. Professor, welcome to the program. You just issued a report on Social Security's financial outlook. And one of the things you talk about is that this program could be in trouble by the year 2034, and it's not all due to COVID. So I wonder if you would share your findings with our listeners.
When you think about Social Security, first of all, I'm delighted to be here, Jim. When you think about Social Security, it's useful to think about two timeframes. One is sort of the next 10 to 15 years, and the other is a 75-year period over which the Social Security actuaries make their projections. And basically, over this long period of time, what we have is a discrepancy between the amount of benefits we have promised and the revenues coming in. In the short term, we have money on hand because we had a trust fund. And we're using the trust fund to bridge this gap between promised benefits and revenues. That trust fund is scheduled to be exhausted in 2034, at which point it's not like this whole Social Security program disappears, but the money coming in through the payroll tax can cover only about 78% of promised benefits. And so all this discussion worry is that if we don't do anything, benefits for everyone would have to be cut by 21%. And if you sort of protect the people on the rolls already, the benefits for newly retiring people would be cut even more. So we have this action forcing event happening in the early 2030s that means that Congress has to do something or else these cuts will automatically go into effect.
Well, given Congress's history, they tend to wait to the last minute. What are the chances we would take steps well before then to uphold the system?
Unfortunately, I think the answer to that question is zero. because there's just no payoff in the view of most of the members of the Senate or the House, because it would mean that you'd have to raise more revenues, which I think is the right thing to do. I don't think you want benefit cuts here. And yet you will only be paying for things that people already think they have. So it won't be like you see a new bridge or a new road or something like that. It will just stabilize this very important program. It is, I think, the most important program in this country. It's done great during the pandemic when all hell broke loose and people still kept getting their benefits for if they were retired or disabled. And for people who, older workers who were nervous about the virus, they had Social Security to fall back on if they were near 62. So it's really proved its worth one more time, and we should fix it. So, and before we get to the abyss, because it will give everybody some sense of comfort, and it's just the way you should do business. But I'm not sure it's going to happen until we're looking down into the abyss close to the 2034 date.
Well, we specialize in retirement planning, Professor, and one of the things that you see in the private sector is, unlike, let's say, our parents' generation, where they had defined benefit plans, you went to work for a company and you retired and you got a certain percentage of your salary. We switched over to these contributory programs where basically whatever you save is what you get. But in retirement planning, the one stable thing and predictable thing for most people in the private sector is their Social Security benefits when they retire. It's the one thing, I guess, people are saying, hey, I can count on that. I don't know where the stock market's going to be, but I know where my Social Security check's going to be. So this is really an important program.
And you're so right. And it's this wonderful form of money because it goes on for as long as you live. And it goes up each year to reflect any increase in the cost of living. So this idea of a real annuity is something you can't actually buy in the private sector.
So when we look at these programs, and as we said, they're probably not going to do something until, you know, they're forced to do it. What are some of the options? You know, one of the problems that we have in reading your report is there's, you know, Americans aren't having as many children as they had in the past. And isn't that one of the issues? Is the number of workers available that provide tax revenues to support, let's say, support those that are receiving the benefit?
So fertility and mortality are both very important. The demographics are very important in determining the cost of Social Security. But the big thing that we see happening now is that we have the baby boom retiring. And they were all born during a period where people had almost 3.5 children over their lifetime on average. And then suddenly the birth rate dropped substantially. So the next cohort was much smaller. So we're seeing this increase in the ratio of retirees to workers. And that's sort of the historical experience that's determining what's happening today. But you're right, in the long-term cost of the program depends on the ratio of workers to retirees as well. And I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going to happen to the fertility rate. It's gone way down. But we've had the Great Recession, then we had a pandemic. The nature of women's lives has changed dramatically. And we're trying to, the Social Security actuaries have to project fertility over 75 years. Somebody said that those women aren't even born. It's their mothers aren't even born now. So a lot could happen. But I think everybody is focused on fertility and what may happen to it.
You know, let's talk about the other side of the demographics. One thing that we've seen with improvements in medicine, people are living longer because, you know, you look back at 1935 or 36 when Social Security came into place, you know, men were expected to live to age 65. Now they're expected to live to age 75. So people are living longer. And I know that a couple of years ago when they were looking at fixing it, they moved the retirement age from 65 to full retirement age at 67. Is there any talk about maybe moving that up a little bit more with people living longer to take some of the strain off?
Well, changing the retirement age is a benefit cut. I mean, it sounds like it's just an adjustment, but it's not. It's a benefit cut. And that means that people who retire at 62 will get a bigger actuarial reduction than they do now. And the people who retire early tend to be lower income, blue collar workers, and for whom working longer is very difficult. And so it seems to me if you're making a cut, that's the worst way to do it, because the high income people can sort of, you know, work another year, the lower income and unhealthy cannot. So first of all, I'm not in favor of any cuts. I feel like what we have in the rest of, as you were pointing out, we've had this shift from defined benefit to defined contribution plans and these 401k plans, which are very good for sort of like the top two quintiles of the income distribution, but they're really not very good for the middle. Basically, when we look at what people have together in 401ks and IRAs combined, it's like $140,000 for a couple approaching retirement. Now, that may sound like a lot to some people, but if you try to, you know, buy an annuity or anything, you don't get much out of that each year. So I think there's not really room to cut back Social Security on the benefit side. I think the adjustments have to be made on the revenue side.
Well, there's talk. I know in the latest proposal, of, for example, once a person makes, let's say, $400,000 as an individual, $450,000 as a married couple, that the Social Security taxes would kick in, bringing in more revenue. So are we likely to see more things like that proposed?
I think that's right. I mean, there's no manna from heaven. We need more revenue. We can raise the payroll tax rate. And I wouldn't be, I know the president is opposed to that, but I wouldn't be opposed to that. Not hugely, and you could do it gradually over time. And the other is to increase the payroll tax base, which is part of this proposal to apply the tax to earnings over $400,000. There's also, I have this other idea that is really never gets any traction in a forum like this, but there's a lot of the cost is due to as a legacy cost, because we were planning to have a trust fund here for this program and finance it on a funded basis in the 30s. And that would have produced interest income. We don't have that trust fund because we sort of gave it away, which means that workers are paying not only for the cost of their own benefits, but also to make up for the fact that we gave benefits to that first generation of retirees. So I think there's some room for separating off this legacy cost and funding that maybe through general revenues of some sort. Although I do recognize how important it is to have an earmarked payroll tax for this program that protects it from sort of the vagaries of the budget process.
What about setting up an actual trust fund where, you know, maybe the trustees invest in blue chip stocks, some high quality bonds, and things of that nature? So, you know, like you see at many colleges where you have endowment funds and things like that. What about that possibility?
So at this point, that would mean that you'd have to bring in money, because basically Social Security is a pay-as-you-go program. With this small trust fund that's about to disappear, but it's a pay-as-you-go program. So all the taxes that come in this year basically go out to pay benefits. So if you try to build up a trust fund, you've got to bring in all those taxes to pay benefits, plus some more taxes to build up a trust fund. And you get into this very thorny issue of sort of, is it fair to ask this particular generation of workers to sort of pay twice for something that we did a long time ago? So I have a feeling that my sense is that the opportunity to have a trust fund for this program is an opportunity that we decided not to seize decades ago. And it's too late to do anything about it.
So let's just say that the president came to you and said, Alicia, I want you to come up with a program to fix this. What would you recommend?
So, Jim, there's a book that the actuaries put out, because there have been so many commissions and panels and groups. And so it's like a menu of, you know, 100 ways to raise taxes, 100 ways to cut benefits. There's sort of like nobody has to think of something new. They're all there. So it really is political will. My personal view is I am not for cutting benefits. So that means I'd have to look on the revenue side, and I would raise the payroll tax a little bit. I would I broaden the tax base to include employer contribution to health plans as part of the person's earnings. So that would go in the payroll tax base. I probably would raise the cap on which the tax is applied, but I would do it. And then I would try this crazy argument about the legacy costs and some general revenues, and I would put together a financing package like that. But if I were a benefit cutter, I'd look in the same booklet that the actuaries put out, and I could find, you know, lots of ways to cut benefits too. So this is really a question of nobody needs to do anything. This is not rocket science. it's all the options are there. I don't think anybody's going to think of anything particularly new. It's a very simple program. We have money coming in, money going out. We have too much going out compared to coming in. So we have to change one of those streams. I want to change the revenue stream, but other people might want to do something different. And there are lots of ways to do it. It's a question of political will. Somebody's got to bite this bullet and say, show leadership. People have put together bills that do go a long way to solve the problem, but Congress needs to take these up and pass this legislation. And I very much hope that it's done in the next few years and that we're not, marching to this point where people are going to be fearful that their benefits are going to be cut. I don't think it would probably in the end happen, but why expose people to such anxiety? We've got enough bad things happening. We could fix this one.
The question is there the political will, and especially since there's such a major difference between parties today, it's very hard getting, both sides of the aisle to come together on anything. So that's one of the issues that I guess any administration is going to have to face going forward.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, this idea of a commission always comes up, but commissions mean sacrifice. I could never be on any, not sacrifice, compromise. So I could never be on any commission because I absolutely do not think benefit cuts should be part of this solution. I know it sounds so fair, like, oh, let's do it half on the benefit side, half on the revenue side. But I just don't think people have enough other sources of retirement income to start cutting back on what they get from Social Security. You see your clients, right? I mean, they're not awash in Social Security money. It seems like benefits are at about the right level.
Well, the other thing, at least in the private sector, is so key. It's the, even if you're putting money away in a 401k program and you've been diligent about saving every month, Professor, in 2000, I could have gone in safe investments like treasuries making 6 or 7%. But today, the treasury market, I think the yield on the 10 years is around 1.3%. So you need more money. And that's the great thing about Social Security is like when we're doing financial plans or a retirement plan, the one predictable thing that we can put in there has been Social Security. You know what it is, and it has been probably one of the most important programs for anybody retiring in the vast amount of Americans today.
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct.
And so I guess have you, in your contacts, had anybody approach you, or is there any movement within Congress to say, hey, this is on the horizon, not too far away. There's some steps that we ought to be taking right now to fix this.
No, and I don't think it's I don't think it's high on the agenda. There are just lots of other things that people are much more focused on than solving Social Security. So I don't think it's going to happen this year. And so once you get through this year, then sort of some of the president's capital has been expended. And I'm just doubtful that, unfortunately, I wish I could be more optimistic that this would be solved in the next couple of years, but I don't think so.
What about Medicare? Isn't it going to find itself in the same situation if you got more people that are heading into retirement, and we know that as we age, we require more medical attention, but they're talking about adding more benefits, which is going to mean, that's going to cost more money.
That's right. And Medicare, too, has a shortfall. I mean, it has a trust fund, which is tiny. So it's the demise of this trust fund receives a lot of headlines, but it's really not very important to the program. But if you add benefits, you add costs. There's no question about it. And so, and it goes on the same tax that is the basis for the financing of Social Security. So we do need to be thoughtful about how much and that's a regressive tax. The payroll tax is disproportionately, especially with a cap, is more of a burden for lower income people than higher income people. So will be interesting to see how this all, what survives the legislative process that's currently underway.
What do you think it's always been? And I've always heard this with politicians, don't touch or say anything about Social Security because it's a non-win if you're running for office.
So it's a very popular program. I mean, it's popular with workers. It's popular with older people. People know their grandmother has it. It's, you know, Democrats like it, Republicans like it, employers like it, employees like it. So it's, if you're, you know, going to say, I'm going to make this smaller in any way, I think that you'll really see a lot of backlash in terms of raising revenue, raising taxes. No one likes to do that or have it done to them. But I think if people, if it were sold properly, that this program needs these revenues to do what it's been doing, I think it, the American people would accept that and step up and pay for it.
All right. Well, listen, Professor, I want to thank you for coming on the program and alerting our listeners to this possible issue. Hopefully someday, maybe we'll keep our fingers crossed, we'll get some people that have a little bit of political spine behind them and we'll fix this problem.
That would be wonderful, Jim.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on the program. All the best to you.
Okay, my pleasure. Take care.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.